She drops the pellets in on day one. 300 healthy juveniles in a pond. She spent 3 weeks preparing, right? Water greening up, zooplankton blooming, aeration running clean. She drops the pellets in and watches them sink and feels responsible. She feeds again the next morning. Same amount. Day three, the same. By day four, the prawns are doing something she notices but cannot quite read, pressing against the edges of the pond, clustering near the shallow end, antennae at the waterline, crowded together like something is driving them there. She thinks they are hungry. She drops more pellets in. Day 10. She calls me. I already know what I am going to hear before she finishes the first sentence. 300 animals. Gone. Not a predator. Not a storm. A soggy pile of rotting pellets, sitting on the bottom of that pond in the dark. Pulling the oxygen out of the water column 1 hour at a time until the deep end went hypoxic and there was nowhere left for those animals to go. Feeding your backyard prawns is the number one question I get from first-time growers, and I understand why. You have put time and money and real labor into this system, and those animals are alive and depending on you, and you want to do something. The urge to feed is the urge to care. I have felt it myself, but the question people think they are asking and the question they actually need answered are not the same thing. Where to find prawn feed is the easy part. Knowing when your pond actually needs it, how to read what it is telling you, and what that clustering behavior means before it becomes a body count, that is what this episode is about. There is a detail I want you to hold on to for now. Those prawns at the edges, crowded near the surface, pressing antennae toward the waterline. I am going to set it down right here, and we are coming back to it. First, I need to build the foundation, because everything else in this process rests on what your pond is doing before you ever open a bag of feed. A properly prepared backyard pond, filled 2 to 3 weeks before stocking, gently fertilized, warming in the sun, is not an empty container waiting to be filled with food. It is already a feeding system. The zooplankton blooming in that water column is exactly what juvenile prawns eat in the wild. Right size, right nutrition, alive and moving. No pellet you can buy at any price replicates that for an animal under 5 grams in its first 2 weeks. The green color in your water is not a problem to solve. It is your first feed crop, and it costs you nothing except patience. This is where most beginners lose the plot. They look at that green water and see neglect. They see those tiny animals moving and feel an urge to intervene. For the first 14 days after stocking, 2 full weeks, no exceptions, your only job is observation. Watch the water color. Watch how the animals move through the column. Check the surface in the early morning when it is most honest. Run your aeration continuously if you have it, because dissolved oxygen is the variable that ends operations faster than anything else, and a heavy zooplankton bloom on a warm night can drop oxygen levels faster than you would expect. Pro tip, and I mean this in the most practical terms possible, your stocking density is the decision that will either protect you or punish you for the rest of the season. Every prawn needs roughly 1 square foot of bottom space. Pack them tighter, and you have compounded every downstream problem before the first week is out. Aggression, stunted growth, elevated waste load, low oxygen, and high ammonia all arrive together when the pond is crowded. It is the kind of mistake that makes everything look like something else and makes you chase the wrong fix for months. I made that mistake in my second season. I had one successful run behind me, and I thought I understood the system well enough to push the numbers. I stocked 30% heavier than I should have, and told myself I would manage the feed rate carefully enough to compensate. By week 6, the animals were stunted, the ammonia was creeping, and no amount of precise feeding was going to undo what had been baked in from day 1. I drained a quarter of that pond, restocked at a sane density, and lost 8 weeks of growth I was never getting back. You only make that mistake once. High stakes warning before we go any further. If you source your juveniles from an uncertified or informal supplier to save money on day one, you are absorbing disease risk that can collapse the entire pond without warning and without recovery. Wild-caught post-larvae carry pathogens. A closed backyard system has no natural resistance to. Buy from a certified hatchery. The price difference is real. It is worth every dollar. Now the feed itself. After those 14 days, assuming your water is holding its bloom and your animals are moving normally through the column, you begin supplemental feeding. What you need is a sinking pellet with protein content between 28 and 32%. Sinking is not optional, it is anatomical. Prawns are bottom foragers. A floating pellet is food for the surface and the rot cycle, not for the animals working the floor of your pond. Sinking catfish pellets at Tractor Supply, Rural King, or any regional agricultural co-op with aquaculture stock will get you started. The protein profile works for growing prawns, and the cost will not break a small operation while you are still learning the system. When you are ready to invest more specifically, Zeigler is an industry-standard shrimp and prawn feed brand available through online aquaculture suppliers. Miami Aquaculture ships nationally and carries Macrobrachium-specific formulations, Pentair Aquatic Ecosystems, Stavros Aquatic Solutions, and Reed Mariculture are all reliable sources for growers who want to move past entry-level products. But carry this with you: a backyard pond run on catfish pellets with solid water management and consistent daily attention will outperform the most expensive commercial prawn feed on the market inside a neglected system every single time. Start with what is accessible. Master the process. Upgrade the inputs when the system has earned it. The tool that will change your daily practice is a feed tray. Take a piece of hardware cloth or fine wire mesh and bend it into a shallow tray, 8 to 10 inches across. Lower it to the bottom before your first feeding, somewhere you can reach without disturbing the whole system. Broadcast your feed in and around that tray, then walk away. Those prawns at the edges are still sitting at the back of this episode. I set that detail down early and I have not touched it since. We are getting close. Come back to the tray the next morning before you feed again. Pull it slowly. What you find is your instruction for the day. Feed still sitting there, softening, clouding. You offered too much yesterday. Pull back. Tray comes up empty. The animals consumed what you put in. Hold steady or consider a modest increase. That tray is more reliable than any formula in your first month because your population estimate will be rough and the pond's natural productivity is still contributing to the feed load. Let the tray tell you what it knows. The general target is 2% of total estimated biomass per day. You get to that number by saning a small section of the pond every 3 weeks. Pull a sample, weigh 10 to 15 animals, average the weight, estimate total population, do the arithmetic, 15 minutes. That is the only way to keep your feed rate calibrated as the animals grow, because they grow fast in warm water and their feed requirements rise with their body mass. Set your rate in week 2 and never revisit it, and by month 2, you are quietly underfeeding a pond that needed more, and you will not know it until harvest disappointment tells you. Feed once daily, morning to early afternoon. Water is warming, animals are active. Feed has time to be consumed before nightfall cools the water and slows metabolism. Broadcast across the full surface of the pond, not into one spot. Prawns establish dominance, hierarchies fast. A single feeding point becomes contested ground, and the smaller animals in your population will lose that contest every morning. After any meaningful increase in feed rate, spend the following week watching the water more closely than usual. Every time you raise the load, you raise the biological demand on the pond. Uneaten pellets, waste, decomposition, all of it draws down oxygen and can push ammonia toward dangerous levels if the system cannot process the load fast enough. Clear water, active animals moving through the full column, a clean green organic smell from the surface, those are your signs. The pond is keeping up. A blue-gray cast to the water or a sharp chemical edge to the smell are your signs that it is not. Now, back to those prawns at the edges. She is standing at the pond on day 4. Her animals are pressing toward the shallow end, antennae at the waterline, crowded near the surface like something is driving them there, and she thinks they are hungry, so she drops more pellets in. That behavior has nothing to do with hunger. When your prawns cluster near the perimeter, press antennae toward the surface, abandon the center and the bottom of the pond. They are running out of oxygen. The deep water has gone hypoxic. The decomposing feed she had been loading in for 4 days was consuming dissolved oxygen as it broke down, and her animals did the only rational thing available to them. They moved to the edge, shallow water, surface agitation, just enough oxygen to survive. They were not asking to be fed. They were asking to breathe, and she fed them more. When you see that behavior, you respond immediately. Increase aeration. Stop feeding for 24 to 48 hours. Test your ammonia if you have a kit. If the animals are still clustered after a full day, do a partial water change, 30% maximum, temperature matched, dechlorinated, to dilute ammonia and restore oxygen capacity. Do not do a full water change. A full change collapses the biological system you spent weeks building, and you will not recover it on any useful timeline. She did not know what she was looking at. That is the whole story. Not negligence, not carelessness, a gap in knowledge at the worst possible moment, on the worst possible day. Now you know what it means, and knowing it changes the way you walk up to your pond every morning, not with a feed bag already in your hand, but with your eyes on the water first. By month 5, if you work this process honestly, There is a steadiness that settles into it. You pull the tray, and it comes up clean and honest. You scan the perimeter, and your animals are distributed and calm and moving through the column the way they should. That same wire tray that sat at the bottom of a dying pond, piled with rotting feed in someone else's first season, yours tells you the truth every morning, and that is the whole practice in its simplest form. So here is the question I am going to leave with you, and I want you to think about it before you answer. She saw the warning, she watched those animals cluster at the edge of the pond on day 4, and she misread it. If she had known what that signal meant before she ever stalked a single animal, before the first juvenile hit the water, would the outcome have been different? Or is there a category of knowledge that only becomes real after the loss?